Hello, this is Malcolm Davis. I'm looking now at a cover of my recent book, The Theban Epics. And on the cover, there's a rather remarkable depiction, one warrior gnawing on the skull of another. This reflects an episode in this series of epics, so-called Theban epics, an episode that comes from the central epic, the one we know most about, the one we have several fragments of, sometimes direct quotations. The Thebais is the name of this particular epic from which the scene of the two warriors comes, and we know that the epic as a whole dealt with the second most famous mythological siege in Greek literature, not the Trojan cycle, but the Theban cycle, and the unsuccessful assault of the famous seven chieftains who tried to attack Thebes. One of these seven attacking chieftains was called Tydeus, and he, in fact, is the man doing the gnawing on the front cover of this book, which derives from an Etruscan artifact, an Etruscan depiction. The Etruscans were quite interested in Greek mythology, especially the more gruesome and grotesque aspects. And this certainly is a gruesome scene. The Theban assailant, one of the heroes attacking Thebes, called Tydeus, had been mortally wounded by a defender of Thebes called Melanippus. Melanippus also was mortally wounded, and Tydeus took revenge on him by gnawing on his skull. This is a horrible story. It's one of the ways in which these epics from the so-called epic cycle, to which the Theban epics belong, one of the ways in which these epics, though we know relatively little of them because they haven't survived to the extent of the Iliad and the Odyssey, but nevertheless we can tell from even the few fragments we have that they were very different in tone from the Homeric epics. The idea of a warrior gnawing vindictively on the skull of the man who had wounded him mortally is quite un-Homeric, far too horrible for the plot, for instance, of the Iliad. If one looks at the background of this story, another contrast with Homer emerges, because the gnawing of the skull by Tydeus meant he was forfeiting immortality. Athena, his patron goddess, seeing him mortally wounded, went off to fetch immortality for him, to reward him. But when she came back and found him engaged in this horrible action, she turned away and poured away the liquid of immortality, the drug of immortality she had been going to give him. So that, too, is a very un-Homeric idea. The heroes of Homer, great though they are, great though, for instance, Achilles is, even he had to die. And the thought that a goddess could contemplate making a hero immortal is quite contrary to the tragic view of life and death that the Homeric epics, especially the Iliad, present. So this fascinating but gruesome scene on the front of my book, The Theban Epics, deriving, as I say, from an Etruscan artifact, and that artifact itself deriving from a central episode in the most important and the best preserved Theban epic, the Thebais, has the largest number of fragments. It is very illustrative of the differences between Homeric epic and the other epics. One wouldn't get this loathsome, grotesque action in the Iliad, and its background, the idea that a goddess could contemplate giving immortality to a mortal, is also very un-Homeric. So the study of these largely lost epics does, apart from being interesting in itself, tell us a lot about the epics of Homer by contrast. And I think we learn the most important consideration, that the epics of Homer, though they are so familiar to us, they actually were the exception to the rule. These other epics, which have largely been lost and are known to us only from fragments or in the case of the Trojan epics from late prose summary, these epics are probably more like the norm, and the epics of Homer were the exception to that rule. The grotesque savagery we find in this story about Tydeus is just one example of the ways in which these epics, not by Homer, were very different from the Homeric norm. But the notion of someone gnawing vindicatively on a skull did, I think, enter, as it were, the European consciousness, and it is reflected throughout the ages. One thinks, for instance, of Count Ugolino in Dante's Divine Comedy, gnawing on the skulls of his children imprisoned with him.